And yet, what words can we say? Because I had to give a title. They asked me for a title for the talk. So I said, Zen is just this. But that's not really it. It's as if we tried to give a talk about the rain, which we all have a direct experience of the rain tonight. Really clear experience of it. Any words that we add to that are just that, just additions, adding something to what is already just this, just rain. And we have our experience of it. We could have a nirvana experience of it, or we could have a samsara experience of it. So samsara, I'm using these Buddhist jargon words, but samsara is a way of experiencing things, our life, a situation, some food we eat, the events in our life, old age, sickness, death, birth. From a samsara experience of that is one in which we struggle against whatever it is. We want to keep it, we want to stay young, and we don't want to be sick. Or we want the sunshine, but we don't want the rain. We want people to look like we look. We want them to think like we think. We want them to act like we act. Or the opposite. We don't want them to be like us. We don't want them to be the way they are. We don't want the world to be the way it is. We don't experience the world just as it is. So for example, the rain, I know this one very well. We really cannot like the rain. We have strong opinions about it. It makes us wet. It makes things complicated. The traffic is complicated in the rain. The wind blows the umbrella. Our shoes and clothing get wet. We don't like it. I know my own thing used to be my hair became frizzy. And I wanted straight hair, and it became frizzy hair. And so I hated the rain. And this is a samsara experience of the rain. Not wanting my hair to change when it rains. And this is the story of our life generally. This endless struggle to make things different. To not be just this. We're not happy with just this, just things as they are. And so we try to change them. And the tragedy of it is that the behavior that we use to change things, the cycle is that that just causes more of the same troubles. So the behavior that we engage in, the actions we engage in to change things, just make it more uncomfortable for us and for the world and for others and our relationships with each other. Because what we're doing is trying to, you know, it's like adding words onto the experience of walking in the rain. Now, I'm not trying to change the experience of the rain. I'm, by saying, okay, I will say something about it, it's like a finger that's pointing to the rain. The words are a finger that are pointing to the rain. Actually, you don't even need that finger because you all had the experience of the rain tonight. We all came from somewhere else except Vito, who probably went in the rain too, I don't know, but he knows it's raining in any case, and he knows what rain is. So all that I'm doing and all of these practices that we do, whether it's, we were talking earlier about Dzogchen, about a different kind of Zen, different teachers of Zen, different opinions we have about them, different affinities, because we might really have an affinity for one teacher, for one practice, one method, one way of approaching rain, or approaching the finger, actually, because it's the finger that we're talking about. We're not talking about the rain, actually. I'm not here talking about the rain, it's the finger. I am the finger pointing at the rain, let's say. So, we can also have a nirvana experience of rain. At every moment, we can have a nirvana experience. So, nirvana is not a place, and samsara is not a place, or it's not even an experience. It's a way of experiencing. So, when we say a nirvana approach to rain, it would simply be to stop struggling against the rain. Stop, let go of my opinions of the rain. Let go of my idea that I should have my hair different when it rains. It doesn't mean I have to like my hair when it rains. But it means that that's it. It's just this. It's just my hair changes when it rains. And it doesn't really so much anymore. This is an old example I'm giving you, but it's a very telling one. It was important for me in my process, and I think you can relate to. Not that you have a problem with your hair in the rain, but you might have other issues with the rain. And if you are living in the countryside, and you have plants and crops, and you live off the land, you're very happy when it rains, probably. Unless it rains too much, and then you're not happy, because then the plants don't do so well because there's too much rain. So when we talk about Zen being just this, that's absolute, makes no sense, that phrase. It's just a phrase, right? Because Zen is not anything, and this is not anything either. We have a Zen, in the Zen tradition that I practice in, we work a lot with koans, which are these stories or poems or phrases that don't make any sense to our intellect, to our usual logical thinking mind. And it's a tradition that comes from China in the golden age of Zen, so this is the 8th century in China, 8th, 9th century in China, the Tang Dynasty. And these are just fingers, let's say, that take the form of a poem or a phrase or a story that point us towards this experience of just this nirvana experience of just this, let's say. Instead of the samsara experience, which is caused by our thinking mind, the mind that doesn't see this, just as it is, the mind that creates the other, the mind that doesn't see the beauty of the singularity of each thing, the mind that picks and chooses, that grasps and rejects, koans, try to help us let go of that mind in order to have a nirvana experience, if you will, of just this. So one of these stories, and there's hundreds of these stories, hundreds and hundreds. In one of these stories, there's a monk, because it's usually a monastic thing, although my lineage today, I'm not a monk, it's not a monastic practice today, but at that time it was. So the monk comes to a teacher, and the teacher says, "Where have you been? And where have you come from?" You know, The tradition was to travel from teacher to teacher and monastery to monastery and practice with different teachers. And the student said, the monk says, I have been at, I can't remember the name, but the, some other teacher's name. So it would be like tonight we were talking about Deshimaru and Hogan. So, okay, so I won't use those names because we have strong ideas about those names. But so let's say Pedro and Juan. So Pedro says, where have you been? Master Pedro says, where have you been? And the student says, I have been at Master Zhuang's place. And he said, oh, so what did Master Zhuang have to say? You know, it's like if you go see someone and they say, oh, so what did she have to say? Yeah. And the monk just held out his arms like this. This is what he had to say, Master Zhuang. And Master Pedro slaps him. He doesn't like that response. There's a lot of slapping and things like that in these poems. And which is part of the finger in their tradition, in that moment, in that place, in that time. So the monk is a little surprised, and he said, why did you slap me? He says, why did you slap me or something? And he says, well, what would you say? He says to Master Pedro, what would you say? And Master Pedro opens his arms. And the monk doesn't say anything. And Master Pedro hits him again. So the reason I tell this story is because makes you laugh, huh? Maybe if you were that monk getting hit, you might not think so, but or maybe, I don't know. So what is going on in this story, you know? The monk very genuinely comes and says, well, this is what the master does, right? He holds out his arms. And the other one slaps him. And he says, well, what would you say? And the guy holds out his arms. So why, when the monk does it, it's not it, and when Master Pedro does it, it is. So can we see in this that it doesn't make sense, and we have a lot of ideas about it? We start thinking, oh, okay, well, he did that because he did this, and he said that, and so that's why he did that. And or we might think, well, he didn't do anything wrong. Why did he get slapped? Or, I see, so he should have done that himself, or he shouldn't have, or whatever, you know. The point being that the way that Master Zhuang expressed just this was like this. But it's a different moment when the monk comes and meets Master Pedro. It's a different place, it's a different time. Different people. So just repeating whatever the master, paid Master Zhuang did, it's fake. It's just an imitation, right? It's not true to this moment. So when I say Zen is just this, it really means just this in this moment, right? It means, don't repeat that phrase, but it means, what is it right now? What is your truth at this moment? What is the truth of this situation, here and now? These people, this place, you know? This moment is absolutely unique. It just so happens that it's the first time that there's been any kind of gathering like this in this place. So that makes it even more new, right? And Vitor has not been here that long. I don't know how long he's been here, but it's fairly recent. So that makes it new. We've never been here before. And Vitor has never been here either. It's not because this is where he works and paints. and spends a lot of time that he's been here before. At this moment, at this time, in this, at this second, right now, he's not, he has not been here before. None of us have. And as soon as we take a breath in and breathe out, we haven't been here before either. So to go around repeating what Master Pedro says, and actually what Master Pedro is signifying with opening his arms like this, is that it's vast and wide. He's opening his arms to welcome this. Welcome just this, this moment. You, here, now, us, this breath. So when the other one does it, Master Pedro knows that it's not it, it's fake. And I like this word fake, and I've told this story before. Do you have a word like that in Portuguese, fake?
False.
It's like false, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there something a little more idiomatic or colloquial or something? But no, okay. You know, many of you have probably heard of or read the book by Myingyur Rinpoche, In Love with the World. And he tells a story in this book of his father was this very great Zen, great Tibetan teacher, right? Very famous, very lots of monks and followers and disciples. And so when he was a boy, he was bathed in all of these teachings. And he always heard about, you know, something like it wasn't nirvana, but it was, I think it was like staying at peace in the nature of mind or something like that. You know, one of these phrases that we use to as a finger, right? And every day or regularly, he would go have lunch with his father. He would go to his father's place where he lived, and his father was always served lunch, you know, because these were, you know, great Tibetan Buddhist dignitaries. And so Myingyur would come, and he would sit with his father while he was waiting to be served lunch. And he wanted to show his father, he was 12 years old, he wanted to show his father that he was really good at staying in the natural state of mind. No, it's not that. I can't think what the phrase is. Some Tibetan thing that, you know, something about staying in the natural order of mind or something. And he wanted to show his father that he could do that. You know, he was doing it right. So he sat there perfectly, you know, just like perfect, full lotus, sitting there, really doing it, you know. And at one point, his father turned to him and he said, "What are you doing, my son?" And he said to him, "Oh, I'm, you know, resting in the natural order of mind or something." And his father said, "It's all fake. Myingyur, you know, it's all fake. All of the phrases, all of the practices, all the rituals, all of the chanting and the mantras and the visualizations, all of it, it's all fake." Wow. This great Tibetan master is telling his son, who's trying so hard to do it right, it's fake. And this was a great moment, I think in the book, if I remember correctly, this was a great moment for him on his path as a 12-year-old boy, and I'm sure his father knew that, and that's why he knew he was probably ready to hear something like that. And it changed then how he approached it all. He had to forget it all then, still doing it, because that was the tradition that he was in. And I think he's a monastic, isn't he, Myingyur? Is he? He's a monk. Yeah. So he was, you know, he really did it. And yet he had to throw away everything he believed about it, everything he thought about it, everything he was holding on to about it, and give himself to it differently. Which led him then eventually to, many years later, when in the book, when he throws everything away again and goes out and wanders for 4.5 years in the streets, and nearly dies, and into the Himalayas. Because that's what we need to do. We need to throw away all the stuff that is fake. And the number one fake in our lives is us, is me. Right? So that's the biggest fake. That's like super, super top fake. I, who I think I am, who I represent, you know, the representation that I present to others, the way that I want people to see me, the way that I think I should be. I'm always looking for something else. Who should I be? What should I be? And that's a big job. That's a lot of work. It's really hard work. And it's primarily hard work because there is nothing there, really. So, you know, we're trying to, it's like, you know what scaffolding is? When they're renovating a building or something, they put up scaffolding. Well, you probably know when you work, right? I don't know what the word is, but.
And that.
Okay, everyone guys know what that is. So it's actually all the stuff that we've constructed is actually the scaffolding in front of something that is nothing. So if we took away all the scaffolding, there wouldn't be anything there. At least not anything there like we think, right? So when we say just this, there is just this, but it's not what we think it is. It's as if we discover, and this is like a great word in English, discover, to take off the cover. I don't know if it works in Portuguese too. Is it,
yes.
Is it something like a cover? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In French too, it looks like that. So it's like to take the cover off, to take the scaffolding away. And as I've been saying, you know, since I've been in Lisbon for now more than 2 weeks, it's been a real experience of that for me, of taking off all of the usual aspects of myself that I function with in my everyday life in Paris. And it's a liberating experience. And it's even, it's liberating in the sense that, it's like if you were constantly living behind scaffolding, it would be a little uncomfortable, right? Or if you were wearing a costume, a mask all the time. Well, in fact, you are, actually. But we don't realize that we're wearing a mask, and that's why it's so uncomfortable. So all of this stuff, like, so, you know, Mingyo's father telling me it's all fake. It's, what's fake is the ideas we have about it. So we do have practices, we do have methods, we do have techniques, we do have different schools and different masters, and but they're all just fingers pointing at the rain. When we sat for these 10 minutes before, at the beginning, for example, we had a different experience of this room than we did when we arrived and we were talking to each other and looking around at the paintings and still arriving, wondering what will she say, I'm wondering what will I say. Will people make it? Will they find it? Whatever it is. And then we sit. And it's a completely different experience. although we're still thinking a lot of what I just said, right? But we've intentionally said we will stop moving around. We will, it's like, if this was full of dirty water, and if I'm moving it around like this, it's cloudy, that water. You can't really see through it clearly. But if I put it down, it's clean water, so it doesn't do it. But if I put it down and leave it long enough, all of that dirt and everything will settle in the bottom and the water will be clear again. Now, this metaphor only goes so far because it's not like when you sit, everything settles to the bottom somewhere and you see clearly. But it does mean that we settle. There is no dirt that has to be put to one side or gone to some bottom position or something. It's not that there's dirt, that there's something impure, but it has that effect when our mind's scattered like that, or scattering. And so when we sit, it has that effect of settling. And therefore, just this can become clearer, more clear. Now, this is a big concept, just this. And most of what gets us in trouble and makes our life difficult is concepts. So again, that phrase, just this, is just a finger. And if we start confusing the finger for the rain, usually we say the moon. The finger is pointing at the moon, but let's use the rain because that's an experience we all had today. Recently. It's all just fingers pointing at the moon. And it cannot give you the experience of walking in the rain, that finger. It cannot, ever. It can tell you a lot about it. There can be beautiful haikus about rain. There can be paintings about rain. There can be songs about rain. You can watch a movie where there's rain. You can. It's not the same thing as walking in the rain, of being direct experience of the rain. And the same thing goes for yourself. No one can tell you who you are. You can't know who you are until you know who you are. And the thing is, we're usually looking outside, and you already are what you're looking for. This sounds really crazy, but that's it. You already are what you're looking for. But you're looking somewhere else. So it would be like you wanted to experience rain and you went inside McDonald's. Well, you're going in the opposite direction. I don't wish anyone going into McDonald's, but that was because when I was waiting for Miguel, there was a McDonald's right there. So you have to go the other way. If you want to experience the rain, you have to go into the rain. If you want to know yourself, well, then you have to come to yourself. But the thing is, you don't know who that is. So it makes it a little more complicated than going into it. But it's actually not. It's actually not complicated. It's just that we have so much weight and baggage around it that it's difficult to experience. Because we have to get rid of all of that stuff. Not get rid of it, let it go, let's say. Nothing has to be eliminated. We just have to not hang on to it. Any questions or comments about just this? Or the koan? Yes, Krisha?
I don't know if I can ask. The thing that you are looking for, you already are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the phrase. Did you experience it? Personally, And if so, do you experience in a continued way, or sometimes the fake, I don't know how we say it, self returns? Don't know if I'm clear.
So already when we say the fake self returns, the fake self doesn't actually go anywhere. It's not like there's this self and then there's this other self and this one arrives and this one goes away and then this one, it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're actually not two.
Mm-hmm.
And there is not actually anything. So already when we're using these words like that, it's complicated. It can be confusing, let's say. But to return to the beginning of the question, yes, absolutely, yeah. A direct experience of let's use the jargon, my true self, yes, definitely.
And it
I would not be sitting here if I had not. I wouldn't be telling you this if I didn't know it myself.
Okay. And it's continuous experience?
The continuous, you know, again, then we get into these...
Okay, relative, okay.
And
was it a relief? Like, okay, this is it. It's just
when we experience that?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Relief, yes. Maybe not. Maybe it can be liberating.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe liberation is a relief.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different words we could use to describe it. But it is the when we realize who we truly are, is then suddenly everything makes sense, yeah. There's no more confusion, let's say. And all of the struggle can be relieved, if you want to use that word, relieved.
Because, I'm thinking personally, of course, because you're not trying, I don't remember the phrase, the thing that you are looking for, you already are. So you are not looking for because you understand that you already, there's nothing to look, it's not you understand it, because everyone can understand this and has some glimpses, but a direct experience, it's different. The relief I'm thinking is the relief that it means that all attachments fall apart, or liberation.
Mm-hmm.
As
that,
more
right,
sense.
That's why we talk about this
yeah.
as a path of liberation, you know, or yeah. But it's radical. So.
And we are really afraid of.
Yeah, absolutely. But see, that's part of the samsaric aspect, is that we are terrified of not existing
mm-hmm.
as we think we exist.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we hate that feeling. We don't like feeling that. We don't like the doubt and the anxiety that arises from that not knowing who we are. And yet we cling because it's the only thing we know. It's who we think we are instead of who we truly are. And so we cling to that, which just makes it more, just adds more of the same on top of it.
Mm-hmm. But what can we do with the fear aspect? Because it's so human in terms of practice.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that, and sometimes... I don't know. I remember I was once with, I think it's Jean Vajiro, the guy from the Theravada,
mm-hmm.
and he asked something, it looked like very Zen. And it was something like, and who is that who is thinking? And I felt for a glimpse liberated. Oh, and then it came a fear. But a big fear, almost primal, very,
mm-hmm.
and then it disappeared. The
fear?
No, the experience. Then then it blocks all blocks and I return to my usual state of conscience.
Well, we can say that the fear too is impermanent, and it's just like we often use the image of a cloud. You know, it's just it too will pass. If we can recognize it as just being that, and not enter into it and become a slave to the fear or something like that, and lead our lives out of fear. Because then that's where we then become aggressive, angry, trying to protect ourselves, trying to destroy others. You know, we see war as basically that. You know, our fear is kind of comes out of the fear of the other, because we don't know who we truly are. So then, of course, we don't know who they truly are. The other is, and so then it's just a spiral that deepens, widens. But it's important to remember, so okay, if, and that's one of the usual fingers we use is, okay, well, so who is afraid? Mm-hmm. Who is thinking? Who is cold? Who doesn't like rain? Anything like this. Mm-hmm. And it's important that, so when you hear that and you have this glimpse, it's important to remember that. And that can serve as a finger for you. Not that you will repeat that experience, and not that you, you know, would be like the guy repeating the experience, but remember what the content of that was.
Something out of the box, but then like some anxiety came, and like with the practice, normally I try and deal, like I look at the anxiety and it's, you know, it's just a process, so don't really need to follow myself with the anxiety, but it's like something that just happens, and like right now I feel anxiety, and it's like, for example, last week I felt a lot of pain, and I was like crying a lot, and I was trying to look at it like, okay, it's a process, and you know, it's like helping me in the process, and it's part of me, or you know, it's just part of it, and you know, it's causes and conditions, and like, you know, I'm crying because, you know, my mom passed away, and you know, and like it revealed something on me. And so I was like crying, and probably this anxiety also has like some backstory. But it's like, I don't even know what I'm asking very well. But like I feel this, and I just felt like saying something.
Well, thank you. That's important. So you see, what we do is when we experience something, then we, it is important to look, okay, the causes and the conditions, and that's very important to acknowledge it. At the same time, we can become caught in that. And then it's as if, you know, when there's a stream or a river, and then there's a branch that's in the river, and a little pond is created, the water is kind of pulled away and gets involved over here in the corner, and doesn't keep flowing. It's important to acknowledge the branch, whatever it is that has arisen for you. It's important to do that, to recognize it, and to not hang on to it, say, because if we say, you know, if you hang on to it, then that's what you have in your hand. this is a metaphor because you don't actually have your anxiety in your hand, but your hands might feel cold or hot or sweaty or tight or something because you're feeling anxious. But so you said you have it in your hand, but if you open your hand, whatever it is you're clinging to, you have it in your hand when you cling to it. Yeah. But when you open your hand, then you have everything. It's not limited to just this thing you're hanging on to. It's like the river that, you know, gets caught on this, and all the leaves and things get tangled up on the side here because there's a log there. Or sometimes the beavers build a dam there or something. But the flow of the river, that also is part of the flow of the river. It's just one aspect of it, though. So you feel this anxiety, but you're not limited to that, let's say. Something like that, maybe. And that allows you, if you can recognize that, then it allows you to have a little more space around it. And it doesn't then dominate. You haven't become a slave to it, I guess, let's say again. You're free to experience it without becoming lost in it or overwhelmed by it. I'm not saying you said you were overwhelmed by anxiety. I don't mean that. But sometimes it can really take up a big space. So there is a time and a place to look at it and acknowledge and look at the causes and the effects and the results and the consequences and your past story and whatever. And there's also a moment to let it go.
My question is it like, since I have the anxiety, then that's who I am now? I am like this person in anxiety.
Yeah.
And that's it, and like my experience is limited in that way. Like, you know, I like freeing myself because I am free of the anxiety. If I can, like, increase.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. No? Just because you're free of the anxiety doesn't mean that you're free, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. What does happen, though, is that you can be free with the anxiety. That's where you truly become free. You can be free with anxiety, free with joy, free with sadness, free with boredom, free with whatever it is. Experience it freely. So then that's where we come to nirvana, a nirvana experience. It's not like some place, you know, that we arrive and everything is perfect. Everything's already perfect. But can we be free with, that's a really good point. It's not to be free from, it's to be free with, I guess. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, please.
I was waiting for somebody, the first part. I completely related to Martin with one thing, but then nobody talk about it. It's about the sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I'm thinking, I don't think it's so much fear or so much anger or eager or whatever for me. It's to go away, to run away from sadness.
Because you don't want to feel sad.
Because it overwhelms me. I accept that, but it really overwhelms me. And I get anxiety, panic, because my first experience with sadness was really tough. So, it's a structure, it is what it is. But sometimes when I think of it, because I have the same problem, I don't know what I'm asking. I really don't know what to do with it, but I know there's something that it's a bit mesmerizing, or the juicy part is you, what you felt, what you, and you can get really caught in that. But then, for me, overwhelms me, and I just be in a spiral of that, of a sensation. So I can't do that. I have to do what you, it's more, it's impermanent, once again, it's a cloud, but I can't be in the cloud and be free right now, because I will fall, I will be overwhelmed. But I, personally, for me, it's a lot about sadness, and I sometimes wonder if war and that, it's all about sadness. If I think in Jew and Palestine, I don't know, I'm just speculating. But, you know, it's the, and we sometimes we really talk about to hear the sorrows of the world. And I think it's for us it's really difficult to deal with sadness. I don't know why.
Well, if,
perhaps it's cultural.
So, you know, if we can see into the nature of sadness, the nature of sorrow, the nature of whatever the emotion is, and see that it's like a cloud, you know, in an airplane and you go through the clouds, you see that there's nothing there really, you know. So if we can see the nature of it, it doesn't mean that the clouds aren't there. We see the clouds and we experience the emotions. But when we can see the nature of it, that makes us, that frees us, to come back to what we said with Martine, that frees us to be with it in a different way, to experience it in a different way. And when we can see the origin of the what causes us to, I don't mean, you know, look into your family history and see, well, my mother did this, or my mother died, or my mother abandoned me, or my father did this, or whatever. All of the traumas we might have. Of course, yes, that's important, but that's not what we are dealing with in our practice. We see really to the origin of the suffering, which is the attachment we have to it.
But what is that attachment?
Sorry?
What is that attachment?
That attachment is wanting it or not wanting it.
Okay.
Whatever the emotion is. Let's just stay with emotions, okay? It can be physical sensations.
I don't want this. I can't help. I can't handle.
Right. You know, it's too much. I can't do it. But if we can see then, and this is the Buddha's fundamental teaching was, you know, he sees the, he said, there is a cause. There is the suffering, and our basic problem of not waking up and seeing things as they are is because we have these attachments. And he said, that's our basic suffering. And there is a way to end that suffering, which is to see into the nature of this, of what is, of this attachment we have. Attachment to what, me is the primary one. But it can be to many different things. It can be to your car, to your house, to your, the way that you, you know, piece of clothing that you had. You know, the Dalai Lama tells this story that I've told many times of giving, you know, several days of teachings in Los Angeles in a big, huge, you know, arena where they usually have rock concerts or something. And every day he had to drive from his hotel. He was driven from his hotel to the arena. Los Angeles is just like endless roads, traffic, you know. And there was one long avenue that was just electronics shops, you know, like cameras, this was pre-computers probably, but radios, televisions, stereos, everything electronic you can imagine. And then Dalai Lama, since he was a small boy, loved electronics and had this, there's even in one of those movies about his childhood, this scene where he liked to take apart radios and put them back together again when he was a small boy. And the story he tells is that every day he would ride past these shops And he realized that he wanted all of these things that were in those stores. And most of it, he didn't even know what it was. But he wanted it. We can so identify with that, right? Most of it, we don't even know what it is. We think it will stop our suffering, though. We think that it will make us feel good. We think that it will make us better. It will make us someone different. If we buy those new shoes, then we will really feel good about ourselves, and that will last maybe a little while, and then we need something else. And the same thing with emotions. You know, we think, oh, if I could get rid of this anxiety, then I would be perfect. That's why, with Martina, said it's not to be free from it, it's to be free with it. You don't have to get rid of it.
No, I understand completely, but...
So it means looking into the origin of it.
Yeah.
And not my family history. So then when you talk about sorrow,
mm-hmm.
So for me what arises is this great bittersweet compassionate sorrow of seeing the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at, the war in Israel and Gaza, the war in Ukraine, just to stay with those two big things that we all pay attention to in these days, or the climate situation. For me, that brings up a deep sorrow to see that how much suffering we cause one another,
mm-hmm.
and how much of it is unnecessary, and that comes from such a confusion about who we really are, and what life is, and what the universe is. But that sorrow doesn't take over my existence.
Because you told us now, and who practice knows that, we settle in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But things like these, sorrows, anxiety, whatever, when you're, for me it was years, but somewhere it starts to arise a lot of stuff. You are settled, and it feels like it's something for you to see. It's like your soul is incorruptible, and it wants you to know, to see, to don't hide from yourself, whatever, I don't know. And then it comes the story, and then you get attached to the story, and then you remind, this is a story, now you know, but perhaps it's for you to go to the origin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just want to set, because it's that you settle, but things come. Things, I think, will come for everyone. And that's an aspect of the practice.
Well, that's part of, what we say, the human experience.
Okay.
Right? Like I've been saying lately, we are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Okay.
And that's part of what the human experience is. Because these forms are limited. In time and in space. And so that's why we have sickness, old age, and death. The primordial pains we have are those three. This body, this vehicle, is limited, that's true. And that's the human condition, the human experience.
Okay. It's just this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it might be nice to think that, okay, we could live forever in meditation where everything is fine. But we couldn't. And then we would not experience love. We would not experience beauty. Because it's not a path of just opening up to our suffering, it's about opening up to the joys too. the joys and the sorrows of the world. That is one of our vows, is to, you know, open to the joys and the sorrows, but also the joys and the beauty, and to see the absolute beauty of this, just this moment, something like that. I've given so many talks in the past week. When were we talking about getting outside the box? Was that in Quimper?
It was in the Krishna's house.
Yeah, it was
in
Krishna's house. Thinking outside the box, you know, so, because that's where our freedom lies. And that's where all great, that's where true art comes from, that's where true science comes from, that's where true religion comes from, that's where our true experience of this moment comes from. It's when we free ourselves from the box. What we should do or shouldn't do, you know, I'm sure Dor can tell the story of being a painter. You know, it's if you just are staying with what everybody else is doing and what they tell you you should do, well then forget it. You know, you may as well just go do something else. Maybe you'll become a really famous artist and rich, but you won't be true to your art. Right? And true to yourself, let's say. So. So can we be free with our limitations? Because if we are, then they're not limitations anymore. So Zen is just this. My teacher wrote on the back of this one, which actually the Sangha gave me this Rakusu, right? They made it, yeah. A great round mirror transmits to a great round mirror. We are all great round mirrors, reflecting great round mirrors. Endlessly, you know. In French we say a mise en abîme. You know, if you put two mirrors together, then it's like this endless reflection. Absolutely fabulous.
If I had a question, it would be like, what remains if you forget all about Zen? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to answer. Just the question, and that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, So let's see. How could I say this? I had a poem about this. Something about having let go what was not mine to let go, something like that. I'd never had Zen actually, and I still don't, and I don't even really care about Zen and all the rituals and all that stuff. So that's not a problem for me, but what I hear in your question is, so yeah, what, like Mingyur, when he goes off and lets go, took off his robes and disappeared and became anonymous into the wilds, you know. I try to do that moment to moment. Part of my project of coming to Lisbon for a month was that, to let Mingyur just go away. Not entirely because I do things like this, but I try to do that moment to moment. Forget it all. Drop it. And keep only what, or not even keep it, but respond to the situation with what seems appropriate. So in my practice with my students, it seems appropriate to have some kind of form that helps us to sit together and settle. It seems to be appropriate to have a ritual for eating together because it keeps us, it brings us back to here and now and the finger, to the experience of this. So I would say I'm always, my intention is always to forget to Zen.
Then you ask, who's the student of whom?
Yeah, that's a good question too, huh?
Who's that?
Who is the student of whom?
Who's the student and who's the leader?
Yep. Well, and so that too, because we see the situation as it is, we see that there are differences and that there are positions and there are roles. And having let go of my ideas about it, I accepted to sit in this chair. Had I not let go of my ideas about it, my teacher would never have asked me to sit in this chair. Because I know this is not me. I've told my this story also, the night when I officially became, I did all the rituals and was allowed to have his titles and sit here. My teacher's teacher said, everyone looks like you're going to a funeral. The Sangha was watching as we were going off to do the ceremony. It was a rainy night like this, and he said, they all look like they're at a funeral. And we all laughed and kept on walking, and then he stopped and he took my arm and he said, but it is. Amy's not coming back. And of course there is this Amy, this form with this life history and children and a husband and all of that. But that's not who this is. That's not who this is.
It's a big joke.
Sorry?
It's a big joke.
It is. Like fake. It's fake again, Yeah. And yet, somebody, I also did not want to say anything. And my teacher, said, you have to say something. I always wanted to share this practice with others. I always want to sit with people and be with people and talk with people and spend time with people. And so that's... it's important to take this seat, fully acknowledge it, take it, and not be attached to it, and not believe in the fake around it. Because it's not about the fake. It's not about... as soon as we start clinging to the fake, then we're lost. It's like the painter who just does fake stuff and makes a lot of money, but okay, fine, who cares? Who cares? I feel like this is going on and on and on. What time is it?
It's not 9:20.
Okay. So if there's one last question, we can take it.
It's not a question, it's just to say something. I don't know if it's the colors of the painting and your colors of your dress.
This was a real coincidence.
It's like, for me, it was like you were there forever. You were always there. No, it's not always, it's forever. It's not forever. Como é que se diz? Sempre. Always. You were, it's a thought to me that you were always there, over there. In that painting, I don't know. Just a comment.
Yep. Well, it's perfect. It is. that's the beauty of every moment, is we don't plan it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plan it. It's always new, and it's as if it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we will stop there. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming, thank you for sharing. Thank you, Vitor, very much. It's a great pleasure. And I hope to see you all soon, or not, or that you have a nice evening in the rain.
Thank you.
So I think you're getting...